Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. Started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams speaking with singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, singing the Solartopia song. That's on the Tomorrow's Children Grammy-winning album, Tomorrow's Children. We're back for another hour in Solartopia. I've got two great guests talking about a couple of different things. The great Don Goldmacher is with us. Are you in Berkeley, Don?
I am.
And you are a filmmaker and an activist, and we're going to talk about Trump and how to move Trump out of there, and also talk about your films. You're going to be with us for a full hour. Because of the election, Don, and what happened in Georgia with all the fingerprints of yet another stolen election, I have invited the truly great Beth Harris on to join us. Beth is a great pioneer who broke the first story about this new millennium of stolen elections in Florida in 2000 by reporting on the flipping of electronic votes in Volusia County, and the giving George W. Bush is the beginning of his horrific 8 years in the White House. And we have a lot to talk about. There's been some email exchange, and I want to get a grip on what happened in Georgia in this special election, about which no one is talking. Everybody in the mainstream corporate media seems to assume that it was all on the up and up, and that there's no reason to doubt that this Democrat did not get over 50% of the vote, which to me is completely not credible. Bev, where are you talking to us from?
From Washington State.
Okay, so Bev Harris, I could talk about you for the next 10 or 15 minutes, but why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch of your work and what you do, how people get in touch with you. And then let's dive in. And Don, you can chime in whenever you feel you want to. But let's talk about this election that happened in Georgia. But first, tell us, Bev, who you are and what you do.
Sure. I'm a writer. And early, around 2002, I got really interested in how the votes are counted electronically using the computers, and was able to kind of luck out and get my hands on the first, you know, actual program, set of files and so forth, and have them analyzed. And really every answer that I learned was the wrong answer. And I wrote a book, and then I started a nonprofit organization called Black Box Voting. In 2016, I actually changed it from a nonprofit back to a sole proprietorship because I realized that at this point I have to be able to talk politics as well as the election science and so forth, because becoming impossible to separate the two.
If you had a nonprofit, you could. There are a lot of things you can't say, and I'm sure Don Goldmacher is well aware of this. There are a lot of things you can't say between candidates. But you become one of the top three or four experts in the country on electronic voting machines, and your black box voting site is the go-to site to talk about electronic election theft. So tell us, we will stipulate with our listeners that you have been on the case at least since 2002, and that you know as much, if not more, about electronic election theft than anybody else in the world. So tell us, if you would, what you think about what happened in this special election in Georgia?
Well, you know, as it happens, there's only about four major systems in the United States from different manufacturers. Some would even say three. But the one that's used in Georgia is the one that I know best, because that's the one that I got the computer files for back in the day. And the system that they're using in Georgia is still the same files, basically, that I had, the program files and the source code, still control that, you know, that system. And then added to that in 2010, I was brought in as an expert witness in Memphis, in Shelby County, Tennessee. And in that, through discovery, I was able to get a lot more files, specifically of the electronic poll books. So I have both the files for the Diebold touchscreen machines, the central tabulator, which aggregates all the data, and for the electronic poll books, which in Georgia, we know in this election, four of them were stolen right before the election, which caused a little intrigue. Today, they released a story that said that they had caught the thieves and the thieves threw them away because they felt that they were not of any value, which may or may not be true. But the files on those systems certainly were of value and could have achieved the theft of the election.
Well, forgive me for my total ignorance. Why on earth would anybody steal electronic poll books?
Right, and then throw them away. Why they're of value, particularly if you if you're politically inclined, a political party, and you have the political databases. Now, there's two types of databases, and when we're talking about voter list, one is what the political guys use, and in those they have they can buy lists of all the registered voters, but then they add in there whether the voters are likely to vote for their candidate or not from a lot of their their robocalls and their telemarketing and their door to doors and so forth. So and they have a lot of other information like who they voted for in the past and what magazines they're subscribed to. So those political databases are valuable because they tell you who to target, okay? But they don't give you access to the actual voter list that you use to check in when you go to the polling place. For that, you need the electronic poll book data. So if you have the political data, which both political parties have, and you get your hands on the electronic poll books, you can then target the voters that you want to target for various kinds of mischief, which can either disenfranchise them or actually change their vote.
It's amazing. So this election in Georgia was very, very close. The Democrats fell, I don't know exactly how many votes shy of winning it outright. And we all know that if he had won it outright, the newspapers would be full, the media would be full of this renunciation of Donald Trump. So this was a very big deal for the Trump administration.
Yeah, it had a lot of PR and litmus test type value, as well as the very real value in terms of gaining seat in Congress. And, you know, there was quite a few signs in this that were very troubling. The first one being that the statewide voter database was hacked into a couple of months before the election. And that has been, I mean, that's not something that's a theory. That has been in the news. And then, secondly, these four electronic poll books were stolen. But there's a third thing that really troubles me in some ways more than even the other things. And that, I put out a toolkit back in 2008 that said these are the things you want to look for that are the classic signs of election tampering. And one of those signs is when everything shuts down for a period right during the middle of the vote count on election night, and when they get the system kind of going again and counting votes again, there has been a trend reversal. In other words, the guy who was winning before, and then it shuts down, and then they get it going again, and suddenly he's losing. That's a very suspicious sign and is something that we should, it's really troubling. Now, that happened as well. They said, oh, we have a problem with the voting machine, and it shut down the whole count, and it's shut down for hours. And lo and behold, the trend reversed as soon as they started it up again. Added to that, yet more issues. And, you know, you kind of have to look at this stuff because we can't get the evidence. There's no paper trail. We can't really get our hands on that stuff. You have to look at it like, how many different points of problems were there which could have changed the outcome? Well, added to that, we have an elections system there in Fulton County, Georgia, that has had for year after year after year questionable things happening with its elections. You have an elections director by the name of Rick Barron who has had problems or irregularities since he got there, but also came from a county called Williamson County, Texas, where they were trying to oust him because his elections in Texas were having irregularities. And in fact, one of them had to be rerun. It had such serious election irregularities. So if you have a situation where the administration is producing elections and has a whole history of producing elections with anomalies and irregularities, and you have stolen poll books, and you have a stop in the middle of the count with a trend reversal, and you have a stolen voter list early, and you're using systems with no audit trail for the public, then you really cannot have any confidence that the results are true. And actually, there are some red flags for manipulation.
God, Don, are you as cringing as I am about this?
Well, look, Harvey, you and I go back to the 2004 election where we saw very similar shenanigans occurring in your home state of Ohio.
That's right.
On election night.
That's right.
You see the election data suddenly freezing in the middle of the evening, and we know subsequently that the statewide vote count was sent down to servers in Tennessee run
right.
by a GOP operative. And so,
yep.
So
and they shut down the
it,
one place in Warren County, saying that no one could see the count because they were having a Homeland Security emergency, which there was no such thing. It was like, Ohio was a trip back in 2004.
So what we've continued to see is the erosion of any confidence at all in our elections at this point, because we know. You know, I mean, Bev famously demonstrated on air on MSNBC that you could hack one of these voting machines within less than a minute because the software code is based on Microsoft's software, which we know is eminently hackable. And, you know, and that was already back then. Since that time, we've seen cyber warfare taking place in this country, attacking every institution, whether it's the Department of Defense or major banks or whatever. So the continued use of electronic voting machines is an invitation to criminality, plain and simple.
You used the exact right framework. We have got an open invitation out there. There's been a lot of talk about the Russians and this and that. And I have one thing to say. First of all, I think that there's a lot of local shenanigans that happen too. You know, it's not all about Russians. It's about the fact that all elections have an open invitation to come in and have your way with them. And if you, there's a wonderful activist from Progressive Democrats of America named Mimi Kennedy, great actress too.
Yep.
And she said, she had the perfect analogy. She said, you know, if you leave something of value sitting out on your porch, you should expect it to get stolen. And that's essentially what we've done with elections. We've left the votes just sitting out there on the porch for people to have their way with.
It's insane. How many votes was he shy, the Democrat, of getting over 50% Georgia vote count? Do you know the number?
I don't have that number. I actually didn't look at the spread this time.
It couldn't have been much.
Yeah, and for me, you know, the other thing with electronic vote counting is it doesn't actually matter what the spread is. It doesn't need to be close. It could be apart by, you could flip it 100% if you wanted, you know. So, in fact, there's a way to do that with the software. There's so many ways with the software used in Georgia. There's probably 100 different ways to do it. But one of the ways is you just edit it so that you change a number. So let's say candidate 48 is winning and candidate 60 is losing, and then you shut down the system and you just change the two numbers so that, you know, Bob is now candidate 60 and the other guy is now candidate 48, and guess what? It's just reversed.
You know, the other thing I'd like to say, because Harvey, you and I are in the media, we're part of the media to a certain extent, and we know that the mainstream media has essentially been in collusion with the unwillingness to seriously investigate the whole use of electronic voting software to conduct elections in the United States. And if I were to point blame anywhere, I would point it at them for not being serious whatsoever, starting in 2000 and continuing to the present. Their lack of curiosity is more than that. I mean, they obviously have a vested interest in this continuing the way it is.
Right, exactly. You know,
they would put an investigative team on this.
And you know, here's how I conceptualize that. You know, we have one presidential election every 4 years, but we have about 100,000 positions elected that are local every year. So you've got, and the amount of money, you know, contract signing authority, the amount of sheer money that is controlled by these results of these local elections is staggering. It's much, you know, it's hundreds of, probably billions of dollars. I haven't even calculated that, but it's huge. So there is a history, a culture in our country of local election tampering and local election fraud. And that's pretty much built into the system. And in some ways, I think, you know, that's where a lot of these folks come up from in Congress. And I think that in some ways it protects, if people really knew how easy it is and how many of those local contests are manipulated, it would call into question all these different things. So, you know, there's a case right now in Texas where there were emails between the vendor, Hardiner Civic, there and the election officials saying, if we, you know, let them see what really happened, it will call into question every election in Texas over the last 10 years. That's what's at stake if anybody really looks too closely.
It's just staggering. I mean, there has not been a single piece, and Don, I don't know if you or Beth, I have not seen a single piece anywhere in any media, including media on the left, questioning the outcome of this election.
Of this particular one, not yet. And you know, the problem is they withhold what you need for actual evidence. In other words, let's say a candidate takes it to court and says, I think that there is irregularities with these machines. But because the very evidence that you need in order to prove that these irregularities had a tangible difference in the result, because you can't get the evidence that you need, they always rule against you and sometimes punish you with making you pay the other guy's legal fees. And we've seen that. In fact, in some cases, the candidate has even proven that they destroyed the evidence. And then the judge comes in and said, well, you didn't get the evidence because the evidence was destroyed, so I'm ruling against you. You know, in Georgia, the systems don't even produce the evidence that you need. And so they use the idea that the evidence is missing or omitted as evidence that there's not a problem. It's bizarre.
Don?
Yeah. The other thing I want to add, because we're talking about local elections, is your listeners need to understand that in every county of the United States, there is an elections official. And that person
right.
is the ultimate arbiter of which voting machines get used in that county or how the elections are conducted in that county. And so What is it, 3,000 or 6,000? I forget how many counties we have in the United States.
It's about 3,300.
3,300, right. So you have 3,300 fiefdoms, essentially, where these officials who are either elected themselves or appointed by the county board of supervisors ultimately determine how honest the election is going to be in that county. And we know that these elections officials and here in California we call them register of the voters. They run the gamut from completely honest to incompetent and worse.
Right, and right.
So it's an uphill battle going county by county and state by state to insist that elections need to be transparent. And they're not. Even here in wonderful California, where we did have a wonderful Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, who pushed the envelope as much as she could get away with. But nevertheless, the county registrars were still able to do what they wanted to do for the most part.
Right. And, you know, there are simple solutions, and this is what is it's both exciting and kind of frustrating right now. Fairly recently, some very simple solutions have come to the forefront. For example, the new paper ballot voting system counters take a photograph of every ballot.
Right.
They take a photograph of every ballot. They could release those on the web immediately when they're scanned, and so everybody could see every ballot. Wouldn't cost them anything, and in fact, Humboldt County, California did just that. Nowadays, it's not on the web. There you go in and ask for a CD. Madison, Wisconsin, Dane County, Wisconsin is where that is. They are now announcing they're going to put those images on the web. So that's one thing. Now, you could still adjust those images, but if the images are an actual photo and there's a simple number, let's say an ID number on each ballot, not having anything to do with who the voter is, just, you know, ballot number one, number two, number three. So you could match up the paper ballot with those images and make sure that they haven't changed anything. This is something that would cost almost nothing, is already available in all the new machines. And what's very interesting is we're now seeing some election officials fight tooth and nail about anybody being able to see those ballot images.
It's amazing. You know,
yeah, and that's really a sign of corruption. I think you have to look at it that way.
Well, you know, there's always... All this stuff is summarized to me by the line in Jack Nicholson's line in A Few Good Men, where he's on the witness stand and he's committed a murder, and they're demanding to know what the truth is. Tom Cruise is playing the prosecutor, and Jack Nicholson says, "Truth, you can't handle the truth." And that seems to be the case in the United States of America. I mean, this is so blatant and so obvious. And to have, you know, saturation coverage of this one congressional election, and to have no one, including, and this is what really kills me, the Democratic Party. Nobody in the Democratic Party, and even the candidate, has even said a word about this. And he's ahead.
Well, you know, it's political suicide for the candidate to do that, because the party then often refuses to support them in a subsequent election. So if you're a candidate and you lose and you see terrible irregularities, quite often the party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, will say, well, you know, don't sue and don't make waves and we'll back you in the next election. But if you do sue and you do make waves, we're going to pull back from you. So that's, I think, one of the issues, is that the parties don't want too much scrutiny, either party.
Right. I would just add that coming out of the presidential election in 2016, a lot of people had their eyes opened during both the primary season and the general election.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I don't want to be Pollyannish here, but I think it's a hopeful sign that a lot more people began to understand that the way we vote and the way the votes are counted are a serious problem for democracy in this
country.
Very
much so, because once you see it, you never don't see it again.
Yep.
Yeah, but here we are, 2017, we've had two congressional elections now, one in Kansas and one here in Georgia. They've both gone to the Republicans, and everybody's saying, oh, you know, Trump this and Trump that, and he didn't get the support that, but they still got both seats. I mean, this guy in Georgia, he's not going to win the runoff. There's no way he's going to win that runoff. It's not going to happen. If he didn't get
50%, you know, you're going to, we're going to have to take it, I think, state by state. Let me kind of give you a rundown. Arizona is fighting transparency in court. There's a great activist there named John Brakey, who's right at the forefront of that. Colorado had another great activist, Marilyn Marks, who fought it all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court and won. In Colorado, they have to give up the ballots and ballot images to anybody who wants to see them. In Vermont, citizens fought it in court and won. In New Hampshire, a citizen named Deborah Sumner has been fighting it in court, and they've been ruling against her. Washington State, citizens fought it and lost. You know, in Madison and Michigan, they are letting people see them, and Florida. So this is happening where people are waking up, and it's getting really interesting because so many of the states are saying, sure, you can see any of this, and the sky doesn't fall. I mean, people can see it. Nothing bad happens. And then you've got the states, and I'll tell you, Kansas is one of the worst. They won't let anyone see anything.
Well, let's talk about Kansas for a minute here. One of the things that I want to know, and this is, of course, based on Greg Kallett's fabulous movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, is the use of CrossCheck. Now, CrossCheck is a computer program that allows secretaries of state to basically strip the voter rolls of whoever the hell they want to strip them of. And it was used in 29 states in the 2016 election, which was won, of course, by Hillary Clinton. And nobody's talking about it. Now, do we know? And of course, it targets blacks and Hispanics primarily. You know, it shifts elections. Was CrossCheck used to strip the voter rolls in this congressional district in Georgia for this election? Do we know?
You know, I don't know when they do it because they can do it at different points. They could have done it a year ago. But Greg Palast really, what really broke that story, and this is still happening. It's not so much, okay, if they used a social security number, that would be one thing because you just want the person to be able to vote in only one state, right? So you make sure, you know, that if you got them registered in a few states, which can happen if they've moved. But what happened, that the story he broke, which is still going on, is they didn't use something really that's a unique identifier. They used things like, you know, Johnny Smith, who's got, you know, who's born on the same day. Well, there's a lot of Johnny Smiths who are born on the same day, and then they would just strip them all. Or they would, in Florida, they don't let felons vote, and they would, you know, if a guy was a felon and his name was, you know, Ben Johnson, then they would strip the rights away from some other Ben Johnson who had never been, you know, so they just didn't use the right filters at all. And that was deliberate. Somebody made a choice to do that. People know better.
But do we know that the voter rolls in Georgia were stripped prior to this election?
Well, they have to, you know, it's the law. You do want to have the voter rolls tidied up so that you don't have a bunch of people on the voter rolls that don't even live there anymore. And there's a reason for that. That's because with the advent of absentee voting and vote by mail, all this kind of those names that aren't really names of real voters that are even there become a slush fund that can be used to stuff vote-by-mail votes in. And I'm not talking about the individuals doing it. I'm talking about some guy who's in cahoots with the ballot printer. Just, you know, gets several thousand names who haven't voted in last elections, probably because they're either dead or moved, and just uses them. So you want the voter rolls to be cleaned, but you want them to be cleaned accurately.
And not on a race base. I mean, the premise of Greg's
No, it has to be based on, you know, if the person has died. And by the way, I had the sad experience of having three members of my family pass away in the last few years. And I know because of that you have to register with the state as soon as somebody is deceased. So it's not like this is a difficult thing. The state gets all these, you know, death notices, and they can certainly populate them back out to the voter list and make sure that when a person is deceased, they're removed from the list. This is not complicated from a data standpoint. It becomes complicated from a political standpoint when they start protecting names that should be removed and taking names off that have only certain, you know, that are strategic. That becomes, they can do a lot of damage to the integrity of the election that way.
John?
I'm not sure I have anything to add on that. She's nailed okay. it, as she always
yeah,
does.
Yeah. Yeah, she's phenomenal.
Well,
so,
I will tell you that there's a lot of weird things going on with these lists, and it gets weirder every year. Part of what I got a hold of in Memphis was the voter lists for over a 10-year period, and I was able to put them up against each other and see, you know, a particular voter, what, you know, if there was any change. And they had taken 13,000 voters who were black and made them white. You know, in several southern states, they track the voters' race, the purpose being so that they can see if they were targeted for disenfranchisement. But so when you see them taking thousands of voters, and they had taken more thousands of voters who had voted every election and then stripped away their voter history as if they hadn't voted. Well, if you don't vote for a period of time, that's one of the criteria where they can make you inactive and eventually purge you. And my work was then picked up and at the state level, and they found that this was happening all over the state, that they were just removing people's voter history. So, you know, the problem with, I mean, you have to use databases, but what a lot of people don't understand, these are just rows and columns. And if a column is you voted in the 2008 election, it takes 1 second to erase that for any strategic target group or for all million voters if you want.
In just 1 second. It's
mind-boggling. Yeah, I mean, it's so fast. You know, you can do a search, you know, you can say, find me all the voters, if you're in a southern state, who have the code African-American or black, B for black, and just let's pull 10% of those and just strip their voter history. And it's just one, it's so fast, so simple to do. It doesn't require hacking. It's just it's the kind of thing any high school kid can do if they took a computer class.
Mind-boggling. It's just, you know, and here we, and what it's produced in the United States is a fascist government. I mean, Donald Trump was not elected. Not only was he not elected, but he was really not elected because on the one level, we saw he lost the election by 2.8 million votes. And how many million votes do you think, in addition to that, were stripped from the voter rolls? And then how many more were flipped by electronic voting machines? I mean, you know,
yeah, but
it's
that
insane.
May have gone both ways. I mean, I think that, too, a lot of times people who, for example, live in California, where it's a very blue state, and I live in a very blue state too, I traveled a lot during 2016, and I'm not actually sure I buy the idea that he did not have enough popular support to win. He had tremendous popular support throughout the middle of the USA, and it was in the South. So that, of course, you know, who really knows, but I can tell you that you know, Tennessee, it did a lot of work there. The number of people in Make America Great hats were lining up out the door in the polls there. So since we didn't see that in the West Coast, I happened to be in California on Election Day, it was a little harder to conceive, but he did have support. But the issue then, of course, isn't even that. It's that, heck, we don't know, do we? We don't know
no.
because they don't let us account for our own elections. They have to be made accountable to the public.
Bev, you sent me a memo of some kind. Is that a definitive memo on the this election? I need to write a piece about what it just happened in Georgia, and because they're going to lose in Montana, too. I mean, you know, it's going to be the same story.
Yeah, Montana's coming up, right.
It's going to be the same story all over. They're just going to say, oh, look, Trump is not as powerful as he thought. But
here's
still,
the thing. Montana has paper ballots statewide. Georgia's one of the worst cases because they've got completely paperless touchscreens and electronic poll books and so forth. Montana's got paper ballots, and Montana's one of the states where they haven't had a test where citizens have asked to see the images of the ballots and the ballots. That's powerful. I mean, I actually think, you know, Jill Stein had a recount done in Michigan and Wisconsin after the 2016.
She made a bit
of a mistake, though. She asked for a recount of the election when she should have gone for an audit of the election. An audit could have got her what she needed to prove that there was malfeasance. And I think Montana could be audited, potentially.
Well, how about an audit in Georgia?
Kansas can't be. And Georgia can't be.
Oh, okay. Don, you're in California.
I want to ask you, while we have Bev on the phone, who really won the California primary in the Democratic Party?
Well,
I think there's a very good chance Bernie did, and yeah, there was a lot of shenanigans.
Yeah. We saw, I mean, the headline in the Los Angeles Times on the night of the California primary stated, I'm paraphrasing here, election night chaos. And they were just describing what happened in Los Angeles County, where it was totally crazy.
Right. Yeah, I was there. I was in California
too. You can attest to it, what was happening here. One of our key activists, Lauren Steiner, based in L.A., saw what was happening as well and put out an immediate Facebook request for people to volunteer to be monitors of the count and the recount in Los Angeles County. And within an hour, 3,500 people had emailed her and said, I'm ready to do it. So what happened is the consequence of that.
There were such big problems. The problems were so egregious. You know, there was a candidate, a small minor candidate named Rocky De La Fuente, who I worked together with to do a request for certain kinds of auditing information. And I was shocked. And here's why. California has the largest number of provisional ballots of just about any place in the country except maybe Arizona. Almost 20% of their ballots are provisional. And so one of the things that I worked with Rocky to request was an accounting of the provisionals. And do you know that the California says it's against state law for us to account for our provisionals in the way that you want, which was the only meaningful way. And so essentially this huge number, 20% of the ballots being provisional, are open season. You can't audit them.
It's insane. You and Berkeley
and then you had this whole thing where you had, for example, they would announce, well, Hillary's ahead by 63% as of election night, and then it turns out it was actually only 53% because the late-breaking absentees, well, there's technology that will achieve that. It will basically, it comes down and it does an automatic, you know, recognition of who the voter is coming down the belt really fast, like 60,000 a minute or something. And it shuffles the ones that the signatures it says don't match, which they can set the tolerance, into a different bin. And those are not counted until a week or two after the election. So if you simply have those voter lists and you say, take the Bernie voters and shuffle a percentage of those over into that late count bin, you're going to have an election night declaration that's much stronger than it really is or is even wrong.
And, Don,
and that's,
you,
that's a critical point because everybody thought Hillary had really demolished Bernie in California.
Right.
And as our election monitors in all 58 counties ultimately pursued it over the course of the next 4 weeks, that margin of victory came way down to like 53 to 47, as I recall.
Exactly.
Right?
And that is another symptom of...
Yeah, here's another point about California.
Yeah.
The way the Secretary of State sent instructions to local registrars with regard to people who were neither in the Democratic or Republican parties, but were rather registered as independent voters.
Right.
The instructions that were sent were highly complicated, number one, and they needn't have been. And number two, each county registrar interpreted it the way they wanted. And we discovered instances where poll workers had no idea what they were supposed to say, or poll workers at different stations were being told different things and were giving instructions to voters that resulted in an inordinate number of people having to cast provisional ballots that Bev was just referencing, whereas they had a perfectly legal right to vote in the Democratic primary.
And
exactly.
The pre-screening, you know, we're talking about cross-check, which pre-screens people by race and Hispanic origins and gets them out of the voter rolls. In California, they strip people out from voting in the Democratic Party if you're an independent. And so the voter,
right,
the pool of voters was pre-cleansed, ethnic cleansed of Bernie people to start with.
Right. And
adding to that, they changed people's party affiliation in the database. And I know this to be a fact because my son-in-law, who was a Bernie supporter, he showed me on election day the data and the card that showed him registered as a Democrat, which was up to date, walked across the street to the polling place to vote, and his party had been changed to green. And
well,
now Riverside County, California, yeah, Riverside County, California, the district attorney
yes.
said our
yes.
voter database has been hacked and the voter parties have been changed for sets of voters. That's huge. It's huge. And that's why I wanted to get an accounting for the provisional ballots, because supposedly they could go in and there would be more, you know. And I wanted to see. And the other thing that happened with both my daughter and son-in-law is they have never in their life voted by mail, and they were both told when they went to the polling place that they had voted by mail. And
oh
so
God.
That's why I wanted to get an accounting for they had to vote provisional. Well, if I would have gotten a proper accounting, I would have been able to tell if their provisional had been counted or if an absentee vote had been counted in their name, which is a much more serious problem. That could indicate someone was stuffing ballots into the pool. So, there was huge problems and a complete lack of willingness to account for them. In some cases, they said the law did not permit them to account for things.
I would just add also that the actual poll workers, and this is an issue that's probably nationwide, who are the poll workers? How are they recruited to the job? Do they have the smarts and the savvy to actually understand everything that should go on during an election? Because, again, our evidence suggested here, just in the San Francisco Bay Area counties, that the level of competency varied from accurate to totally false information that workers were handing out on election day at the polling stations.
And that's another
problem.
This is why this is all done by the regular Democratic Party. And this is, to my mind, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, this is why one of the reasons why the Democrats don't raise this issue, because they're invested in stealing elections from people like Bernie Sanders, as the Republicans were invested in stealing elections from Hillary Clinton. And we have a totally corrupted system. So, Bev, I want to ask you, you emailed me something. I haven't got a chance to look at it on the Georgia election. I want to put out an article that raises this issue. Is that your definitive? Do you have a definitive?
Yeah,
memo
in
on
fact,
the,
I sent
election?
You one that had sources and links as well.
Yes, I saw
so that.
So
I had it point by point, because that way nobody can contend that it's not true. It's not opinion. It's fact. You know. So there's that one, and then I also sent you a couple with more information on the electronic poll book issue. Those worthless things that they threw in the trash.
I'm going to read that over the weekend. I have to say, I have gotten to the point. Bob Petrakis and I broke most of the major stories from Ohio in 2004,
right.
And that's 12 years. I've gotten to the point where I actually hate. I love to write, but I really hate sitting down writing about this stuff. I hear you.
It's toxic, isn't it? Because they know, and you sitting here just beating the same old drum.
And you know, I've been writing about this is my 44th year fighting nuclear power. And I have to say that I prefer writing about people dying from radiation than I do writing about people stealing elections. Because it is so infuriating on so many scores. It's such a cynical thing to do. And then you can't get people to pay attention. And, you're a conspiracy theorist. And the three of us here know perfectly well that these elections have been stolen. And, for this thing in Georgia to happen and to have the guy ahead 53%, and then suddenly at the last minute, and there's always the glitch, in one of the machines, and then something happens, and suddenly everything turns the other way. And no one, the whole country was watching this election, and no one has said a word, least of all the candidate or the Democratic Party. I mean,
it's a classic sign of tampering. What happened in Georgia, and by the way, it's
those who do math and statistics will know this. It's harder for other people to get. But as you get more and more votes flowing into the system, you need bigger and bigger swings in order to change that overall percent spread. In other words, if you have 10 votes in the system and you add two and they're both Democrat, it's going to change that percentage of spread quite a bit. If you have 100,000 votes in the system and you add two, it's not going to do very much to the overall percent. So if you have something in the middle of the evening and then they all come back and it's changed by 5%, the spread, that's actually mathematically very difficult to achieve.
Unless you're
a good point.
Yes. I mean, unless you're sitting there with the keyboard in total control of the electronic voting machine and you can make the outcome whatever the hell you want to make it.
Right. Which is why the Fraction Magic series that we put out this year was important, because that showed that the mechanism is inside the systems already to preset that percent. So you could say then, okay, my guy is going to get 53%. No matter what the votes are, he's going to get 53%. And it will automatically change the votes as they come in to make sure that it ends up at 53% or whatever you set. And it's so precise, it lets you do it by precinct so that it can mimic the demographics. And that's why it's so dangerous. In fact, Bloomberg News did cover that. And they said it was the most dangerous feature that they had ever seen. They said you can't even imagine anything worse than this. And it's built into the system. And so you got to say, why is it in there?
Don, do you have an answer?
I think the answer is obvious.
Yeah, because they want it in there.
Yeah, they want it in there just in case.
Just in case.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, at some time we're going to have to, you and I, Harvey, talk about the confluence between nuclear power and all of this, because there's a guy who was right at the forefront of developing a lot of the bad stuff in voting systems named Jeffrey Dean. And he worked before this for right before he did that. And I think he was working on elections then, too. He works for a major nuclear power player.
Well,
so,
you know,
yeah, you and I should have a conversation behind the scenes sometime on that.
Well, I'm not surprised. And, you know, but what's so difficult here, although I have to say, and I'm thinking about this because I put out a piece that Don responded to about how to get rid of Trump. But here we have now an electoral system that's completely broken. Anybody who thinks that bad as Trump might be, we're going to get rid of him in 2020, forget about it. We don't have an electoral system. And, you know, all the things that happened in 2016, Hillary Clinton, who I did not support, won allegedly, apparently, the vote count, 2.8 million, which is substantial. And she won the exit polls in the five states that swung the Electoral College, which is Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. All five. It's virtual statistical impossibility that she would win these five states in the exit polls and lose all five of them in the official vote count. I mean, come on. You know, the odds on that are insane. So
yeah, and I'd like to just say something on the Russian thing, too. You know, I've been a little bit pushing back against the Russians, because I know that the bedrock of this stuff is at the local level, is built there for the local level, and some of what they're protecting is local level stuff. But that doesn't mean the Russians can't do it, and they certainly do. If you talk to folks who are in the intelligence community, as I have, in Europe, they actually are involved pretty aggressively in cross-tampering, you know, where one party in the Ukraine is going for this guy, and then the Russians are going for the other guy, and they're both tampering the electronic voting systems. And so it's like, may the best hacker win. But the issue, the danger of focusing everything on whether a foreign power or an outside hacker can do it, is you can go towards solutions that have to do with making it encrypted and security and even more opaque. Whereas you can solve the problem for both local corruption and for a, you know, foreign state tampering by making it truly transparent immediately to the public, because we would see it if it was the Russians, and we would see it if it's the local yokels.
Well, it's now, we have 10 minutes left. I was going to talk with Don about his film. Don, we're going to talk to you later about that, but tell us what your film is, please. I'm going to have you back, but tell us what your film is. Bev, stay on. We'll finish with that, but I did promise. Don, how do people get a hold of you and of your film?
Well, the title of the film is called The Long Shadow, and it references the long shadow of slavery, white supremacy, and the role and the political role of the South in shaping the country's politics from the Constitution, from the crafting of the Constitution, right up through this election in Georgia on Tuesday.
There you go.
The enormous clout that the South has used, and they used it first in the crafting of the Constitution, in which they said, if you don't put in this clause about three-fifths of a human being for each slave, thus giving them extra electoral power by counting those bodies of slaves, not giving them the right to vote, but nevertheless counting them as part of the population of each state. So the southern states actually had more electoral clout than they should have, and that was the price of their staying in the Union and being part of the United States of America at its very founding. And, of course, then if you skip to the Civil War, they decided, well, we're not getting a good enough deal. We're walking because we want to keep slavery going. And then Reconstruction happened, and they got rid of that pretty quickly. So we cover all of this from the very beginning, from the beginnings of the country right up to the present time, revealing this inordinate power of the South, which we saw in this election as well, because the southern states that used to be nice Democratic states are all nice Republican states now, so that they can maintain, you know, their latest version of Jim Crow politics.
And now it's also Juan Crow, because they're, you know, they're actually more Hispanics now than blacks in America, more African Americans. Mm-hmm. And between them, you have about 30-35% of the population. And, you know, the entire structure of the Republican domination of the American government now is based on disenfranchising blacks and Hispanics. How can people get a hold of you, Don? What's your website?
The website of the film is literally thelongshadowfilm.com. They can see the trailer there. And if they'd like to actually even donate a little bit, that would be great, because we still need a few more bucks to get the final product ready. It's not. We're just submitting it to film festivals, so it's not available for public viewing at this point, but the trailer is. And we encourage people to take a look and let us know what you think, and let us know how you can help, and whether you would want to have a screening in your community when the film becomes available.
Beautiful. Don Goldbacker, great, and you're in Berkeley. And Bev Harris, how do people get a hold of you?
Blackboxvoting.org is the website. It's pretty inactive at the moment, I'll warn you, because I'm working on a pretty complex and a major new piece of research, which it's going to take me most of the year to complete it, but then it's going to activate again pretty good. But, yeah, they can get a hold of me, and there's a lot of information on that site, just a tremendous amount.
Blackboxvoting.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and you've been with that since 2000, so... I you'll be glad to know, both of you, that I'm in the process of putting out a hat, a Donald Trump hat that says Restore Sanity, and it's going to be purple so that it's both red and blue. And I'm going to craft – I got to say one big thing before we go. O'Reilly is gone, and, you know, there was – somehow we got rid of Bill O'Reilly. I never watched him. I never understood why people watched him. It never made any sense to me. But the coverage has been pretty spectacular. It did not take an election to throw him out. And somewhere in there is a lesson of how to get Trump out. And
yeah, let me just respond to that, because that's actually what we were going to talk about today, Harvey. So let me just mention
that
people really want to understand how you overthrow corrupt governments and dictatorships, go to a website entitled aeinstein.org, and it's all about Gene Sharp's brilliant work on nonviolent struggle and resistance that has been successfully used in 30 countries around the world since 1992.
All right, Don, you and I will talk about that next week. I couldn't resist getting Bev on. Bev,
no
you are just a national treasure. Your work is spectacular. I am going to put out a piece over the weekend. Anybody want to contact me at Solartopia at Gmail? I'm going to write this piece about what happened in Georgia. I'll run it by you guys before we put it out there. But it's outrageous. It's outrageous both because they stole it and because nobody said anything about it. And at this point in time, we should be way further down the road than watching a special election like that just completely ripped off. And you know, all, the three of us and many other people just saw it unfold. Were you surprised? Did we know what was going to happen? Hell yes. It was like watching the Patriots beat the Falcons, you know. Same deal over and over again. So anyway,
yeah, it's tough to watch. And I think that the populace as a whole is pretty skeptical at this point. But just most people feel very powerless. And it's like, well we didn't even know what to do. It's such a big problem. And it's not that big a problem. That's one thing I'd like to get across. Actually, everything's in there to solve this problem. It doesn't even cost money. So that's what we have to do is put our shoulder against the wall and insist on accountability in these elections, public accountability.
And I got to say, I'm going to conclude by saying the big problem is the Democratic Party. For them to sit there and watch this happen and not say a word, come on, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll take that up again. Bev, you're welcome to join us next week, Don. And Don, you and I are going to have this conversation. It's been an honor to have you both on. Thanks to the crew in New York, and we've had another week in Silvertopia. This one, a little infuriating. Someday, we will have universal hand-counted paper ballots. Thank you both so much for being with us, and we'll see you next week in Silvertopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna